Back last Christmas, Jenny got a text from Nia.
My message from Nia says, "Hi Jenny, it looks like I'm going to be successful in my voluntary assisted dying application. I'm stopping treatment, which means I now pretty much have incurable pneumonia." She says, "I'm happy. I'm going to win. I feel completely at peace with letting go of life."
Nia Sims had sung in the choirs that Jenny ran, and their relationship had been formed through song.
And she finishes with, "The days I went to choir were truly some of the very best days of my life."
Nia said she only had 2 or 3 months to live.
My gut response is to go and spend time singing with her.
I'm Iyukyaki Ranta, and in our last episode of Earshot's Promise Me series, Jenny Swain makes a promise to Nia.
"I want to capture her story before it's too late. I text back to say, Nia, I feel like we've got a teensy bit more to do in this world together."
And just a warning, there's some strong material coming up.
Hello.
Hey, Jen. Come and give me a hug. That's it. Oh. Lay it on me.
I think this might be the first time we've ever hugged. Nia feels like a fragile, bony bird. In the 15 years I've known her, she's had this rare, non-hereditary autoimmune disease called scleroderma.
Yeah, if my hands are not cold. In essence, I'm living inside skin that's like a wetsuit that's two sizes too small, and it's getting smaller.
Nia's fingers are stiff and folded over, and her lips are so taut she can't fully close them.
Parts of my body, like the tip of my elbow and my knuckles and other bony parts of my skin, are breaking down because the skin can't stretch over those bony bits. At the same time, my lungs are affected really badly.
Nia was diagnosed in her early 20s. She was working as a nurse at the time, but she says she'd never even heard of scleroderma.
I got sick very quickly. I was extremely short of breath, extremely sore in my muscles, severely fatigued all the time. It felt like how you might feel after doing a 10-hour hike up a mountain. My partner, who I'd been with since I was 15, didn't cope with the diagnosis at all and withdrew emotionally and physically. I felt really abandoned. And it's definitely the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to me.
So Nia lost her imagined future. She broke up with her partner, she went to live with her aunt, and then with her mum.
Scleroderma stopped me from playing the piano and the flute. So to continue making music, I started going to choir, and I loved it. Made some great friendships.
That's when I met her. Nia turned up to the choir I was running, and I liked her straight away. She was very droll and kind of cheeky, but still authentic and appreciative and just great to have in a group.
I've always really enjoyed singing with other people. When I'd go to choir, I'd say, I'm off to singing yoga now. It's the best physio for lung health. And it's communing with other people and connecting through sound vibrations. It's creating something that's, everyone contributes their individual voice to create a sound that's greater than the sum of its parts. That's really satisfying to listen to.
Nia also loves to dance. Even though she's mostly bedridden, she's been religiously attending these online dance classes that have really kept her going. Actually, Cosmic Dancer is the first song that Nia wants us to sing together.
Dance myself out of the moon. I dance myself into the tune. Is it strange to dance so soon? Myself into the tomb. Oh, 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 oh. I've been terrified of a bad death for 25 years. I didn't want to die of lung failure, which means getting a pneumonia and drowning in my own lung secretions, or of gut failure, which was the other likely scenario, and that would have meant starving to death. I did a lot of excessive drinking over the years to try and escape that fear, so much so that I ended up in rehab a few times. I tried to kill myself twice because I was afraid of the future. I was afraid of what I knew was going to happen to me.
I remember the time Nia's dad was dying. She knows what a bad death looks like.
Those last 2 weeks he was so agitated. Mum and I were both really traumatised by the drawn-out process that was his death.
Nia's little sister Bella is also still grappling with that trauma.
When my dad passed away, I had a three-year-old and a newborn, and he was in the Royal Melbourne, I think, and I didn't get to say goodbye to him, and he died scared and in pain and alone. And I just got a phone call the next morning, Dad's gone, and that was it. I had to deal with it from then on.
And having been through that in combination with my own living in terror of dying of lung failure, I learned that legislation for a voluntary assisted dying scheme was going to be tabled in Victorian Parliament. And that flicked a switch in me. I wanted to get that legislation passed for myself and for Victorians and for Australians.
Nia discovered Go Gentle, the organisation that Andrew Denton established to promote voluntary assisted dying, or VAD, and she wrote to them about her father's death.
The CEO of Go Gentle called me and said, I remember her saying that your piece of writing had the whole office in tears and we really want to work with you.
They made a film about Nia's dad. And when the bill to legislate for VAD in Victoria was being presented, Nia was there in the parliament, in the gallery. She made this amazing commitment over hundreds of hours. She even stayed overnight while the politicians objected, debated and filibustered.
I wanted to be metaphorically the dying person in the room. I wanted the members of parliament who were going to oppose this law to say it to my face. I stayed and I stayed and I stayed. I live tweeted directly to the members in response to their arguments. I really tried to make my presence felt as strongly as I could. I wore bright colours. I walked up and down the corridor during breaks to make sure that I was passing a lot of people who held in their hands the power to decide whether I was going to have this choice about my own death.
Let me go gently, let me go. Let me go.
And at that time, I wrote this song for Nia, Let Me Go Gently, dedicated to our dads and for Nia to use to add another emotional layer to her presence in the parliament.
Don't let me suffer such shame. Hear my dying refrain.
And it was a beautiful song. And I felt really supported when my choir learned and sang that song with me. What a beautiful way to support someone, to write a song about their difficult emotions. I was really touched.
To the ones that I love, then let my departure be soon.
That campaign was successful. The bill was passed. Nia couldn't physically do that now. She couldn't get up the steps of Parliament.
There's not many ways for me to escape physical discomfort and pain. I'm extremely vulnerable to lung infection. So COVID has been an extremely isolating experience for me. One of the things that helped sustain me in my enforced isolation is music. Mornings are really hard for me. When I first wake up in the morning, my stomach flips over with anxiety. Oh, another day, I have to get through another day. I quickly put some music on and it's often, "Hey Siri, play the Beatles." Music immediately takes me out of self-pity. Start singing, start moving, and pretty soon the endorphins start flowing. Music is magic.
Nia is a fearsome organiser. So through the NDIS, she's organised this wonderful array of support workers, including Rebecca and myself.
My name's Rebecca Barnard. I'm a musician, and Nia got in touch with me and asked if I'd like to come and support her a couple of days a week, a musical thing, coming with my guitar and just singing songs together.
And
I keep sitting on my nose.
Can you bring yourself closer to me?
Our friendship has really become really strong, and it's really pure. It's really honest. I mean, if you're dying, Nia doesn't sort of muck around with small talk or pretend to like something or, yeah, it's really unusual to have a relationship like that.
Heaven, I'm in heaven.
Yeah, I have to agree. I really look forward to my Nia sessions now. Beck and I have started meeting at Nia's bedside on Mondays, and the three of us have been singing together. It gives Nia's mum, Robin, a bit of a break too.
With mum getting older and not coping, I really did come to a place of feeling like it's...
I'm not sure I understand.
Sorry.
That's okay, Siri. It's hard to understand.
Yeah, yeah. She does say the most apt things sometimes. I need to use the loo now because I have an urgent feeling. Cheek to cheek.
But even though we're often lighthearted, Nia's constantly managing extraordinary health and healthcare challenges. It's relentless. Last year, Nia had to go back into hospital for IV drug treatment for yet another acute lung infection, and she was kept waiting in emergency for 48 hours.
I thought there was a fair chance that I wouldn't survive that admission. I had no sleep. I was dehydrated. I felt unsafe, exposed to infection. Some of my medications had not been delivered from the pharmacy. I was sick of being stuck with needles. My feet were killing me every time I stood up and walked from room to room, still do. I decided I'd had enough treatment and enough pain. Decided to stop having any antibiotics for chest infections. And I applied for volunteer assisted dying.
To get VAD in Victoria, you have to see a coordinating doctor and a specialist, and they have to agree that you're suffering intolerably and that you're likely to die of natural causes within 6 months. And both Nia's doctors have agreed.
And because lung infection would almost certainly kill me within 6 months, my application was successful. The first feeling was relief from the terror. It was a rush. The second feeling was I felt empowered and emboldened to push on in life. I feel brave enough to try more aggressive treatments, and they're working. And I'm still with my family. I'm still singing. I'm still loving and laughing. At the moment, I can still feed myself. I can stand up with assistance. I can walk from one room to the next. My hands are really deformed, but I can still handle objects. I can paint, but when I feel like I'm trapped and I can't move, to scratch an itch on my face or blow my nose or to cover my face when I'm crying because I don't like people to see me cry. That's when I won't want to be around anymore. And I've been thinking about this for so many years, so many years.
Nia messages me in March to say that her peace of mind in a box has been delivered. Apparently, when the pharmacists came with the VAD drug, the Nembutal, they told her she didn't have to use it straight away. She was under no obligation to use it at all. And they spent about 2 hours with Nia and her mum.
I was really aware that it was really, really stressful for her, but that she wanted to understand what the process would be if and when I accessed it. It makes her really uncomfortable having the Nembutal in the house. She understands that I don't intend to use it without letting her know, giving her the option to be with me when I use it. At this stage, she's ambivalent about whether she wants to be with me. It's just a very concrete reminder to my family that I'm going to die. It's kind of paradoxical that the thing that makes me feel safe and secure makes them feel insecure.
So Nia's feeling so good about everything, the box in the cupboard, her beautiful support workers, the singing and dancing sessions that have all improved her quality of life so much, she's not in a hurry to end her life.
I'm cautiously optimistic that I'll still be here in 2, 3, or even 4 years from now.
Wow.
Now I can relax a bit. All this year, we've kept having to postpone our sessions because of bloody COVID and all the winter flus and pneumonia. And I've had such a sense of urgency to capture Nia's story, to fulfil my promise. We can even add to our list of songs.
So it would start, I am your true shepherd.
It's quite high for me.
Too high?
I'm your Nia wants to record Meet Me in the Middle of the Air. She says it speaks volumes.
I am your true shepherd.
So your peace of mind in a box is in this cupboard.
That I can see from my
okay.
bed. Okay. Inside we've got a classic metal petty cash tin and the label says, make into a mixture and swallow this in under 4 minutes. Warning, if ingested, this substance will cause death. And it's got my name.
So it says here, it's a criminal offence under Section 84 of the Voluntary Assisted Dying Act 2017, carrying a maximum penalty of life imprisonment to knowingly administer the substance to another person.
How does it make you feel opening the box and looking at it with me?
I think it's frightening. You know, like I'm keen to pack it away because it's so powerful.
I've just been reading here that it can take up to 1 or 2 hours to die. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that hour or 2 hours for you is there's something incredible that happens. For that 1 or 2 hours, you might solve the world's problems or just feel, who knows, it could be incredible.
And if there is a spirit, and I don't know whether there is, I hope that I get to float above and look down and feel a sense of, oh, I've been living in that body. It's been such hard work for so long and now I'm not in it anymore. I hope that's what happens. And I hope I feel at peace in letting go of my body and letting go of the people I love and the world and this beautiful planet with all of its beautiful things and all of its desperately heartbreaking things. Oh, I don't know where I'm going.
Flow state. It's great because we don't talk like this.
I don't know. When I don't know where I'm going when I die. I didn't lose my train of thought there. I've always been a pretty committed atheist. No church in my upbringing taught science at school, so I've always thought that there's just nothing after we die, and that in fact it's probably pretty arrogant of humans to think that we live on, that our identities live on after our bodies disintegrate. I think that death is like going to sleep and never waking up again. I love going to sleep. It's when I wake up that I feel anxious about the day ahead. So I don't fear death. I'm not afraid of not existing.
It's already June. Nia called me 2 weeks ago to cancel our Monday session because she was going to look at a fancy, expensive wheelchair. It felt like she was so clearly affirming her future. And then she called me last night. She said, "Jen, there's no easy way to say this, but it's time." Her heart's playing up. This is unexpected. It's something that could send her to hospital in exactly the way she wants to avoid, and she has to remain calm in order to make it to Tuesday and be in control of her death. She said she can't afford to get too emotional because of her heart, so no face-to-face goodbyes. Tuesday's the day. She'll have her family and her main support workers with her. I know this isn't about me, but I'm not ready. I wish I'd known that the last time we met was going to be the last time we'd sing together. Nia's sister Bella got a message too.
I think it was the Sunday I woke up to a big message from her, and it was really long, so I immediately knew that this one was, you know, quite significant. She was like, "Belle, it's time." I said, "What do you want to do for the next 3 days?" She just wanted to watch movies. She couldn't really move, so we watched The Life Aquatic, and then the next night we watched Our Brother, Where Art Thou? And we had chicken chips, lots and lots of chicken chips. She asked me to put her to bed. So I said goodnight, told her I loved her, came home, tried to get a good night's sleep, woke up in the morning, got all the kids ready for school, brush your hair, get your shoes on, come on, we're late, just like a normal day. And got them to school. And then my partner Rory and I went over to Mum and Nia's house, and Nia had a shower, got really comfortable. The feeling in the air was like so calm, and it was all coming from Nia. It was just, you know, just radiating from her. I took over a candle that my son had bought me for Christmas. It was a big one with like 3 burners on it, and it had this beautiful smell. So I lit that. We put on music that she wanted to listen to. And then we all sat around her bed, talking, laughing, telling stories. And then she eventually looked over at me and just, you know, nodded at me. And I knew that that meant, "Can you go and get the drink now?" So I had mixed up this drink for her in the kitchen, the Nembutal, an hour before, just after I'd given her the Valium and the anti-nausea tablets. And it was really profound doing that. I was having this conversation in my head. "I don't want to. I don't want to. I didn't want to be the one, but I was doing it because it, it felt like such an honour to do that for her and not, you know, make up for not being there as much as I could have or should have. And I felt like throughout my relationship with Nia, I'd let her down many times. I was always so busy and I had a family and, yeah, I felt like, and I still feel like I could have done a lot more. But she never held it against me and she always understood that, you know, I had a life to live and she wanted me to do it. And it was really important for me that I do it for her. When she went to the toilet and then came back to the bed just before she drank it, she said, "This is the last time I ever have to walk on these fucking legs." And she was almost excited, you know? I think it felt like she was going on a big adventure and that's what she made it out to be. And she had 4 minutes to drink it, but she drank it in 2 seconds, which was amazing. That's what I mean by she was ready. She was like, you know, let's get this done. And I was sitting on the right side of her, holding her hand. My mum was sitting on the left, holding her left hand. And my brother was holding my mum's hand. And after a minute or two, she said, I'm starting to feel sleepy now. We just sat with her and just sort of stroked her arm. And she knew that we were all there. Just looked like going into a beautiful sleep. Yeah. And then she closed her eyes and she sort of became unconscious at that point. So it was very, very quick. Her breathing slowly stopped. And then her heart probably stopped after 15 minutes, but she was unconscious after about 4. And it was so peaceful and unexpectedly beautiful.
Nia, being Nia, texted a few friends up until the last minutes of her life. I sat next to my phone, looking at the clock, counting the minutes. She'd said it would be at 11 a.m. I messaged her these words. "I can't tell you how privileged I feel to have walked alongside you. I promise to do everything I can to magnify the impact and legacy that you're leaving behind. And I will meet you in the middle of the air, in voice and spirit. Always your loving friend and admirer in ethereal vibrations. Know how loved you are. Thank you for everything, dear Nia. Go well." And I know she read it because she gave me a little thumbs up.
"I will meet you in the middle of the..."
"Meet Me in the Middle of the Air" was written and told by Jenny Swain, with original music from Jenny and Rebecca Barnard. Our producer was Claudia Taranto, and our sound engineer was Russell Stapleton. And if this program has raised any issues for you, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14. I'm Miyuki Okiranta, and thanks so much for joining me for our series, Promise Me. If you missed any of the stories, listen back to the whole lot on the ABC Listen app. And while this might be the last episode of Promise Me, keep an eye out on Earshot in your podcast app, because we'll be back next year with more heartfelt, intimate stories around the theme, Follow Me, tales of being led and led astray. Have a great holiday break, and I'll catch you in the new year.